Welcome to this special report on tactical food security. This is Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger, founder of healthrangerstore.com. And we are facing a food scarcity situation, a scenario that's been engineered that none of us have ever lived through. Now, right now, in the wholesale market, the commercial markets, food prices across the board are up 80 to 90%. Or so this year. So we're talking about the prices on corn and soybeans and wheat and canola and many meat products and so on. Now, a lot of these prices are only beginning to trickle into the grocery store retail sector. So most Americans have not yet seen these price increases. And for most of the year so far, the mainstream media, the lying corporate fake news media, has claimed there's no inflation, because that's what Janet Yellen has said. Oh, there's no inflation. And yet prices are doubling on many things. And prices are going to double on food. This is coming. Inflation is here. Inflation is horrific. Fuel prices are up. Lumber prices are up. In some cases, 500%. You know, copper prices, aluminum prices. So electrical wiring for new homes is skyrocketing. And because of increased fuel prices, transportation of everything is more expensive now. And this, there are many other examples of this. Inflation is here, and it's hitting the food industry very hard. You're going to see, from this point forward, massive increases in prices at retail, at the grocery store. Now, some of the food companies, they have been, let's say, shrinking their food products. It's called shrinkflation. So they're reducing the number of ounces in their products, or the size of a loaf of bread, or the number of crackers in a cracker box, or what have you. But they can only do that so much before people notice. Eventually, they have to really raise prices. And that's exactly what's going to start happening. Well, it's already begun, but it's going to get way worse. So with that understood, we are creeping into a scenario where the average American will have to spend as much as 40% of their income on food. 40% of their income on food. This is going to bankrupt many families and many Americans, especially with housing already so high, where people are spending, in many cases, almost a third of their income on housing. There's no way they can spend 40% of their income on food. So what's going to happen is increasing desperation for acquiring food will expand what I call the behavioral Overton window, which is a person's allowable range of behaviors that they feel are justified or acceptable in society. So right now, at least before now, we've lived in a mostly polite society, and you know, unless you live in downtown LA or Seattle or something. Most Americans live in polite society where neighbors don't steal food from other neighbors, typically. That's just not something you see very often, especially in more middle-class suburbia type of neighborhoods. You don't have neighbors raiding other homes for food. But that's only because people have decided in their own minds that that's not an acceptable behavior. Well, that behavioral Overton window is now expanding. And you will see people so desperate for food coming up that they will feel justified in stealing food from their neighbors. And in fact, the higher food prices get, the more you're going to see not just shoplifting out of grocery stores and convenience stores and so on, and not just the hijacking of food delivery trucks, you know, grocery rigs that are delivering food to grocery stores. They're going to be hijacked and looted, which is what we saw in Venezuela over the last decade or so, by the way. You're also going to see farms raided. Farmers are going to be subjected to theft of their cows, theft of their crops, more than usual. This is going to become a national issue. Those of you who are farmers, you need to start planning for this. But then also individual homes in suburbia, just suburban neighborhoods, are going to start to see food violence and food looting and theft. if your neighbors see that you're away from your house during the day because you still have a job that requires you to go to an office, they may decide to break in and raid your pantry and refrigerator during the day. And if you told your neighbors previously that you have storable food, then you're probably going to be on their target list because they're going to get desperate and think that, hey, anybody who has storable food must have, well, extra food. And that's going to play into their decisions. So we're dealing with a situation, again, that we've never lived through, not in American society and not in most first world nations like Canada, for example, but it's going to happen. It's already begun and it is inescapable. And as the starvation gets worse and worse, that allowable behavioral Overton window continues to expand to the point where when people are hungry enough, they will kill for food. And that's coming in certain areas as well. People will kill for food if it means not starving to death. So this is what you need to understand. There's a spectrum of behavior, and the more severe the hunger gets or the food scarcity, the more severe it is, the more behaviors are justified in the minds of people, which means they're going to be willing to attack, loot, rob, kill, threaten, whatever the case may be. So that's the background to what we're going to talk about here. That's the background. And I'm serious about all of this. You need to think about tactical food security. So now we're going to discuss some of the ways that you can achieve food security and protect yourself, even if you live in a suburban neighborhood. In fact, that's going to be kind of the focus of this, is a suburban neighborhood type of scenario. Because let's face it, if you live out in the country and you're far away from other people, you already have sort of natural barriers or protections. Number one, you have lots of ways to grow food, should you choose to do that. And people who live in the country tend to be more self-reliant, so your neighbors are probably doing their own food thing as well. Whereas people who live in cities or suburban areas, they tend to rely on the system, the grocery stores. And so they're the ones who are going to panic first. So if you're closer to them, then you're automatically in more trouble. So obviously, one of the answers to this is, as I've said for many years, get out of the cities. Get out of the suburban neighborhoods. If your neighbors are just, you know, 25 feet away, or if you're in an apartment, you're in a potential threat zone when it comes to food scarcity. So get outside of the cities, get into a rural area as quickly as you can. The other practical thing that you can do, and there's a risk associated with this, but you can talk to your neighbors and try to convince them that food scarcity is coming and try to convince them to become preppers. The downside of this is that this will admit to them that you are a prepper. So if they refuse to prep, and let's face it, there's a lot of oblivious, idiotic people today, and you can identify them usually by the fact that they're wearing masks while they're walking around outside or driving in their own cars. You probably don't want to waste your time talking to those people because they're not going to prep, but they will remember that you're a prepper and then they'll come for your food one day. So just something to think about. You'll have to assess your neighbors and figure out what's the best way to go. A third thing to do is, of course, increase your own personal security, which is something that everybody should be doing anyway. So just in case this goes kinetic, it would be a great idea to make sure that you are competent with a couple of different types of firearms, notably a pistol and a rifle. So an AR-15, you know, combat type of rifle, semi-automatic, you know, full-length 16-inch barrel, the whole deal. It's a good idea to become proficient in an AR-15 if you're not already. And AR-15s are considered really light weapons. They're not hard to handle. They don't kick hardly at all. I mean, there's virtually no kick whatsoever, despite, you know, what Hollywood shows you and TV shows. Firing an AR-15 is extremely easy as long as you have the upper body strength to just hold it up. A lot of women don't. So a lot of women will go with shorter AR-15 style pistols or even 9mm carbines, which are lighter and easier to shoot with. Those are good options as well. But everybody should be competent with a pistol. And there's going to be a day where you're going to need to wear a pistol in your own home if you don't already. Now, I've done that for years on my ranch. I'm always carrying a pistol with spare magazines. It's just the way that I've lived my life because of the threats that are unique to me. But everybody who wants to survive is going to have to wear a firearm soon, because could be a knock on your door one day, a year from now, massive starvation has hit your state, the grocery store shelves are empty, knock on your door, and it's your neighbor, says, hey, it's your neighbor, Bob. And you're like, oh, it's Bob. And you answer the door, and Bob's got a shotgun in your face. And Bob says, I'm really sorry. I had no other choice. I need some of your food, okay? So that conversation is coming. And if you don't have a gun on your hip in that moment, you really don't have any way, you know, to react. And if they've got a shotgun pointed at you, you might need to, you know, figure out the proper way to handle that. Now, I mean, I'm trained in weapon takeaways. If someone puts a shotgun in my face, it's real easy to deflect and take that shotgun away or push it to the side, grab your own pistol, fire three or four rounds into that person before they know what happens. But that's, I wouldn't advise people to attempt that unless you have a lot of training in doing that. And, you know, even if a shotgun goes off near your face, it's going to be loud and it's going to suck, but there are ways to survive it. Nevertheless, think about that kind of situation, because that is going to increasingly happen. Now, but there are other things that we can do as well without having to resort to firearms. And of course, one of the best things to do is to hide your food. So hiding your food in your home, around your home, in your yard even, we'll talk about this, is one of the best ways. That way, if your home is robbed or looted, it's very unlikely that they will be able to find much of this food. So where to begin? Food can be bulky, so you need a lot of physical space. And some of the best ways to do this are in the basement. If you have a basement, build a false wall so that you have maybe a 6-foot area behind that wall to hide buckets of food. Or if you have a pretty big closet, maybe a walk-in closet in your home, you can build a false wall with drywall, with a secret compartment to get into it. And you can, maybe it's your master closet or something, you can get in there. And you have a secret door and you've got a food stash behind there. I mean, now I know that those are kind of complicated to build those. So some simpler things to do are, you'll have to have some drywall and some paint skills, but you can go out and buy a stud finder and locate the studs in your walls. They're normally every 16 inches. And then cut out some drywall in between the studs, and you'll have some space in there to stash food, like canned foods and jars of peanut butter and things like that. And then you'll have to patch back up the drywall. Now, I know this sounds like a lot of work, but a couple of jars of peanut butter could save your life one day, depending on how bad the starvation is getting and whether your local government is coming to confiscate your food supply. This will happen, especially in Democrat-run states. So if you're living in Oregon, Washington, California, New Jersey, New York, Illinois, you should expect the government to come try to confiscate your food at some point. When they do that, they will enter your home without a warrant, and they will look for food, and they will take what's convenient for them to find and take, but they will skip the foods that they can't find, i.e. the foods in your drywall, you know, the foods hidden in secret locations in your basement, things like that. Those foods will enable you to stay alive. So think about all the things that you have in your home and where there's empty space. Where could you hide things? Some people may choose to hide food in a fireplace that they're not using, and then they would stack wood in front of it or something to cover up that food. Some people may be building a new house and they're designing new hidden compartments. Some people may decide to hide food in the backyard. And this is a good option. It requires very good containers, such as the polyethylene pails. Obviously, you got to protect your food from moisture, because if you bury it in the yard and it rains, you don't want moisture to get in. Also, if you hide food in your walls, make sure that you have rodent-proof containers and ant-proof containers. Don't just throw a bag of chips back there, because you'll end up just having mice eat it all. They'll eat through insulation and everything to find your food, and they'll just leave behind a bunch of mouse turds in your walls. That's not going to help you when the day comes that you need your food. Burying food in your yard is an option. You can also hide food in vehicles, including maybe an old broken down vehicle that's in your backyard, if you're using that even as a disguise or something. You can hide food. Some people will take an old refrigerator, you know, just an appliance, and they'll bury the refrigerator sideways. Just lay it down, dig a big hole in the yard the size of the refrigerator, put the fridge in there, and then put containers of food inside the fridge. And these food containers need to be fully sealed, you know, waterproof, weatherproof, ant-proof. And then they'll close the door on the fridge and cover it up with a thin layer of soil. You could bury an entire fridge. Other people will bury polyethylene barrels, like a 30-gallon drum or a 55-gallon drum, full of food, bury it in the yard. It's a lot of work, but you can put a ton of food in a 30-gallon drum, by the way. And you can go, you know, dig it up later when you need that spare food. And a lot of these foods will store for 10 to 20 years, especially grains like wheat and so on. And you could store a wheat grinding machine with it. These are just some ideas of some things to think about. A couple other tactical strategies. One is to buy clothing that's too large. And I heard this tip from Bob Griswold at Ready Made Resources. He recommends this to people because everybody else in your neighborhood is going to be losing weight. And so it will be common for people to drop pounds and to have clothes that are too big. Very common. Well, if your clothes aren't too big, but everybody else is wearing baggy clothes, eventually the local townsfolk are going to figure out that you're not missing calories somehow. That's amazing. So what you need to do is buy, you know, go to the local Goodwill or wherever and buy some used clothing that's too big, and be prepared, you know, to wear that around in public. The other strategy is to start right now training yourself to consume fewer calories, because it's something your body can get used to. And you can also drop pounds right now so that you appear thinner the next time people see you who haven't seen you in a while. And the easiest thing that I found, this just works for me, is to drink a smoothie in the morning and then fast all afternoon and then just eat one meal in the evening. So it's a, and by the way, I'm doing this right now because I put on a few extra pounds during the COVID lockdown situation. So I decided to just do this technique to shed some pounds, and it works great. Again, you do a big smoothie in the morning, almost like a full Vitamix blender full. I do an avocado banana smoothie with turmeric and flax seeds and coconut water and what else? Whey protein, some things like that, cacao. And I just drink that, sip that in the morning, noon, and then I fast all afternoon until about, say, 7:30 or whatever, and eat one good-sized meal in the evening, and that's it. And that's a bit of a calorie restriction diet, but it's easy for me to do, and you don't go to bed hungry because you had that meal later at night. So whatever you decide to do, get your body used to eating less, because that's going to be something that you're likely going to have to do. And you notice that so far in all of this, I haven't yet said, you know, go out and buy more storable food, because that's an obvious thing. Everybody who's in the know is already doing that. I'm talking about how to hide that food, or how to stretch that food, how to train yourself to eat less. If you're living on, you know, 3,500 calories a day, as a lot of Americans are, could you get by on 2,500? Answer, yes. Could you get by on 2,000? Probably so. You know, depending on your level of activity. Could you get by on 1,500? Well, that's tough. That's a stretch for a lot of people. But you could certainly reduce your caloric intake by a third and still be fine. It just takes some training to get used to that. Okay, the next strategy is guerrilla gardening or guerrilla food production. This is to produce food in ways that are not obvious to your neighbors. So yes, you can grow food in your backyard, or you can grow food in containers on your patio, and you can also grow food hydroponically indoors using LED lights. If you do these things, and I recommend that you do, if you do these things, make sure you do them in a way that's not obvious to everybody else. So if you have a garden in your backyard, try to hide your garden as much as possible or make it look like it isn't a garden. Now, there's a simple way to do this. Stop mowing your yard. Let the weeds grow. Let the grass grow. Let it all get tall. And then somewhere in the middle of that, you might have a garden area, but then don't make it shaped like a square. People always like to have a square or a rectangular garden. You don't have to do that. You could grow a few potatoes over here. You could grow a tomato plant over there, some zucchini somewhere else in your yard. Distribute your plants around the yard so it doesn't look like everything's all in one place. And then you're much less likely to have someone drive by or peer over your fence and say, hey, well, it looks like a garden. All right, now you may also have, maybe you have a backyard that's got some trees. So think about what could you plant under partial shade, you know, depending on the type of plants. I mean, some plants need full sun, but some will do well in partial shade. What could you do that would still produce calories for you that wouldn't be open to like the full sunlight view? And then also, if you're growing hydroponically indoors or on a balcony or something, how can you hide that from nosy neighbors? How can you, let's say if you have hydroponic lights that are on to grow your plants, how do you turn off those lights at the appropriate time so your neighbors don't see that you have grow lights on late into the evening that are obvious just from driving by your house or looking at your house from across the street? So think about light pollution. Light will give away hydroponic systems. Think about distributed gardening or guerrilla gardening. And then think about food preservation that you know how to do. Canning, drying, salting, smoking, you know, different kinds of food preservation techniques. Because food that you grow and then preserve yourself is food that I call off-grid food. Off-grid food is food that's not known by the government. It's not tracked. Because they're going to implement biometric, mark of the beast, food tracking systems and food limits, just like in Venezuela. You're going to see this all across America. There's going to be a limit to the amount of food that you're allowed to purchase. And it's going to be tracked with maybe a palm scan, an iris scan, you know, your vaccine passport app will have a food quota system built into it. Who knows? This is the Orwellian nightmare come to life. But if you grow food, that's off-grid food. It's just like, you know, how you make your own firearms and have no serial numbers and they're called ghost guns. Well, you can have ghost gardens, basically. That's another way to say it, ghost gardening. Is off-grid food that's not tracked by anyone, and this can keep you alive. This can spell the difference between life and death, because at some point the government may say, well, you know, we're reducing the caloric allowance to 1,200 calories a day, and everybody's starving. You know, except for the tattletale people who turn in food hoarders, you know, they turn in their neighbors to the government. They get a food credit reward. And that's how the government's going to basically arrest and incarcerate all of the preppers, is just have them turned in by their own neighbors. But for everybody else, they might get reduced to 1,200 calories a day. So they're on a starvation diet. But if you have, let's say, 500 calories a day of your off-grid food, your ghost gardens, you're going to be able to stay alive where many other people won't. So that's another reason to have off-grid food. And right now, you can go to the grocery store and buy food that's not tracked, you know, pay cash to get the food, stock up now while you can. And that's all off-grid food. It's not necessarily being tracked to you if you bought it with cash and you don't have a, you know, an RFID biometric chip implanted into you yet, right? So that's off-grid food, and you can store that in a big way. Oh, and by the way, some people have camper vans and RVs and such. An RV vehicle can store a whole lot of food as long as you can keep that RV secure and it doesn't get stolen. It's also a great place to store quite a bit of food as long as the food is vacuum packed and, you know, safe from humidity and safe from insects and so on. So these are some of the ideas of tactical food security. I hope you found these to be valuable ideas. Think about what's appropriate for you in your situation and where do you live? Is it a red state? Is it a blue state? Is it run by lunatic Democrats who are police state, you know, Orwellian control freaks? Or are you living in an area where you have more freedom? And just compile that into your plans when you decide what to do and how to run with all this information. But stock up now, because food security is going to become one of the biggest issues for the next couple of years. And if you want certified organic, lab verified, storable food, of course, my store offers that, healthrangerstore.com. It's packed in very thick, vacuum packed bags, individually packed of different types of food staples inside the Ranger buckets. You can go online to healthrangerstore.com and learn about that. We have availability on and off. Sometimes they're sold out, but we're always making more. I anticipate the prices of those food buckets will double over the next 2 years, or maybe the next year, depending on what it costs us to get the raw materials. They will double, and there's nothing we can do about it. We're probably going to be lucky to even get the raw materials coming up soon. So whatever the price is now, it's a bargain compared to what it's going to be. It's an investment in your food security. And right now, it's all off-grid food. The government doesn't know you have it. So find ways to hide it. Find ways to keep it safe. And it may just save your life as the food crisis really kicks in over the next couple of years. Thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care.